Talk Radio.
We're going to talk about how the corporate Democrats are doubling down on the Russia strategy. Wait until you hear the quotes that are part of this story. It's almost like we hopped in the time machine and went back to the actual McCarthyite era, and you'll see just how maddening it is. We also have the next set of priorities for the Trump administration after getting their ass handed to them on two separate fronts with the Muslim ban and with health care. So we're going to discuss that. We have Lindsey Graham versus the Democrats. He comes out swinging for Neil Gorsuch. And then later on in the show today, we have a story about how United Airlines apparently has a dress code from like the early 1900s. Wait until you hear what they're kicking women off of their flights for. It was just absolutely unbelievable. I struggled believing it when I first came across it. And then we also have some stuff from David Sirota about how Republicans are trying to basically chip away at the Buy America provisions that Donald Trump has been championing on the campaign trail, and that Democrats are actually on board with. So that's a really shitty story because you have a Republican president whose all systems go on it, at least rhetorically, and then the Republicans are basically trying to gut it. So we're going to talk a lot about that. Still got a little bit more about health care and some good news about what the Democrats in the House are pushing for. So you don't want to miss that. You don't want to miss any of this stuff. Got a really great show today. All right, let's go ahead and get started here. And we're going to do that with – we'll start with the Buy America story because this shows you how the corruption 100% of the time overrides even positive rhetoric on the campaign trail. All right, so let's get started. Journalist David Sirota has quite a story here about how Republicans are working against Buy America provisions for the government. So he reports, courting the Midwest voters who proved pivotal in his election win, Donald Trump has consistently reiterated his campaign promise to rebuild America's infrastructure and protect domestic jobs. Quote, we will have two simple rules when it comes to this massive rebuilding effort, he told an audience at a post-election rally in December. Buy American and hire American. Within days, though, House Republicans, under pressure from lobbyists for foreign companies, had killed legislation that would have directed government infrastructure contracts to hire American manufacturing companies. It was a bold act of defiance against the rhetoric of the newly elected president, and now a top Democrat is attempting to force Trump to put his Buy America promises into action against his own party in Congress. The Government Accountability Office issued a report earlier this month showing that compared to 57 of its trading partners covered by procurement agreements, the United States is opening up far more of its government spending to foreign contractors. In all, the report found that the United States opened up $837 billion of its government spending to foreign contractors while its next five largest trading partners opened up less than half that amount to U.S. contractors. Percentage-wise, the U.S. federal government opened up 80% of its procurement to foreign contractors, far higher than major trading partners such as Japan, 30%, and South Korea, 13%. Okay, so what that shows you is, you know how the establishment and the elitists, they always say, oh, protectionism is so bad, it's such a terrible thing, we need free trade, that's what we need. Well, why is it that other nations are some of our top allies? They manage to have very protectionist policies, but, you know, that doesn't spark a trade war on our behalf. We don't, go nuts and crack down on them as a result of that. We understand that, hey, they view it as in their national interest to basically open up their infrastructure projects to their own companies within their own borders. It just means, you know, having good jobs for the people in your country. But 80%, we've opened up 80% to foreign contractors. Japan, 30%, South Korea, 13%. So this idea that, like, no, we can't do that, it'd be a horrible thing. No, we actually should become much more protectionist. There's some things I'll never understand in politics, like how certain words and concepts have been demonized over the years. Like liberal, for example, that was demonized massively under Rush Limbaugh. And throughout, like, the early 2000s, if somebody said they were liberal, it was like a laugh line. Like, you're liberal? Now, liberal has recently made a comeback, but it was demonized for the longest time. Another one I'll never get how it got demonized is protectionism. Like, okay, would you want to protect your family? Would you want to protect your kids? Do you want to protect your neighbors? You'd say yes to all that, right? But then for whatever reason, when you talk about, you know, protecting our jobs and our industry, they go, oh, stupid. Because that flies in the face of freedom. You know, freedom of the CEOs and the owner class to ship out all the jobs to Bangladesh and Turkey and elsewhere so that they can pad the bottom line and pay people, you know, much lower wages to do the same job that an American can do the job for. So I'll never get how protectionism was demonized. Welfare is another one. Like, oh, welfare? You think welfare is like a good idea? Ew, welfare? Yeah, again, would you look out for the welfare of your kids? Your parents, you know, your friends, you'd say, of course I would. What the fuck are you talking about? But for whatever reason, just extrapolate that a little bit. Would you care about the welfare of your neighbor? Yeah, I guess so. How about the person who lives four doors down from you? Nah, fuck that person. I don't care about their welfare. So I'll never understand how those things got demonized. So what that shows is, yes, we should be more protectionist. And we're, whenever somebody says free trade, like, I'm a free trader. Just take that word out and put in the word outsourcer, because that's what they are. They believe in outsourcing. It's not freedom. It's outsourcing good American jobs. So Trump on the campaign trail said repeatedly one of the main reasons he won, because he flipped that Rust Belt in his favor, was the Democratic firewall, and then he hammered away on trade, and he won. But one of the reasons is, probably the biggest reason in that area, is he kept saying, we're going to buy American, we're going to hire American, we're going to do infrastructure projects and rebuild everything. It's going to be tremendous, believe me. Well, second he gets in there and the Republicans, the House Republicans fear, oh shit, he might actually do that. What do? They undercut it, they kneecap him, and they say, no, we are specifically and explicitly stating, because foreign lobbyists influenced us, that we're not doing Buy America. So the party that loves to run on patriotism and nationalism and we're American, they're the ones who just took the knife and, jammed it in the back of poor workers in Michigan and Ohio and all these depressed factory towns. They just decided, yeah, we're going to kill that. We're not going to have that. We're not going to have Buy American, Hire American. We're not going to, like, another Trump signed an executive order. We're going to use American steel for whenever we do these projects around the country. And then what happened? Immediately after that, his administration said, but we're going to exempt, the Keystone XL pipeline, for example. What? So first of all, they approved the Keystone XL pipeline. Disaster. Second of all, they said, we're going to buy American for that. Buy American steel. And then the next day, it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to exempt that. These guys are so fucking slimy. It's unbelievable. And here you have it. The Republicans are like, yeah, let's just kill legislation that would have said, buy American. Use American manufacturing. The Republicans killed it. The Republicans killed it because they take money from foreign lobbyists. That's what happened. Now, who's coming to save the day or attempting to save the day? The Democrats. So Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin introduced basically a Buy American, Hire American bill for a water infrastructure project, and the Democrats aren't talking about it. I mean, how often do we discuss this problem in politics? I mean, this happens all the fucking time, where you have the Democrats propose a decent idea, and instead of all getting on the same page, all hammering it home, all driving the point, what do? They're lost in the wilderness. You know, they're out there yelping about what Trump said on Twitter or Russia, Russia, Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. Did I mention more of Russia? Russia, Russia, Russia. So that's what they'll do. They'll be out there screaming about Russia, not connecting any dots, all based on implications and assumptions and leaps of logic, and maybe this happened. Ooh, Manchurian candidate. Ooh, his puppet, Putin's puppet. And you're basically making it so that even though you have a gift by having the Trump administration and this crazy-ass Republican Party in power, you still somehow can't beat them because you can't focus on the right things. So Tammy Baldwin is 100% correct to put this bill up for a vote, to propose it. And the other Democrats should fall in line right behind her and start hammering away on this, because there's a winning argument right there. First of all, nobody's even mentioning. Like, I had to read a fucking obscure article in the International Business Times to even learn about this. Nobody's even mentioning that the Republicans killed the Buy American provisions for manufacturing, for infrastructure projects. Nobody mentions it. Nobody mentions it. The party that claims patriotism the most just killed a Buy American provision for manufacturing and infrastructure. So bring that up. Bring it up. Bring it up repeatedly. And then talk about how, hey, we are proposing a bill that's Buy American, Hire American for water infrastructure. And it's Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat, who brought it up. Why are you not bringing that up and talking about it endlessly? Because there's arguments that actually would make you win. If you portray it, and this is accurate, as the Republicans are the party of foreign lobbyists, literally, they did their bidding, again, quite literally, and the Democrats are trying to Buy American, Hire American, and here's our bill that says it, you have to, then you put the Republicans in corners, say, go ahead, vote against it. I want you on the record again. You already were on the record once because you killed it when Trump was leaning in that direction. I want you on the record. So we have the Democrats. We actually have Trump with us on this one, all of his rhetoric on the campaign trail. So we're going to pressure him, but you're the ones who were primarily responsible for killing it, House Republicans. So now we want you on the record twice. You're already on the record once. You want to stab the American people in the back twice? Is that what you want to do? Go ahead. I dare you. I fucking dare you. Because we're going to take a megaphone, and we're going to go out on all the talk shows. We're going to all do Senate speeches and House speeches, and we're going to say, look at you. You're traitors. You stabbed the American people back. You want to talk about the real, you know, Russia, Russia, Russia scandal? Well, the real scandal is not just for Russia, for all these different, you know, foreign countries and their various manufacturing companies, how the Republicans prioritize them over American workers and American manufacturing. That's how you make an argument. But this is how Washington works, man. And the point is, like, they've gotten to – it's a whole nother level of brazen in their – in how they lie, you know? The Republicans – oh, yeah, we care about America, patriotism. That's what it's all about. Trying to get jobs, good jobs. And then when they're presented with the clearest opportunity ever, with even a Republican president saying, yeah, let's do Buy American, Hire American, and the Democrats pose, yeah, let's do it, they're like, yeah, and did I say that? I'm going to kill that bill. Kill it. And again, why? Foreign lobbyists. So, and by the way, this article, you should go read this article in the International Business Times, because David Schroeder actually gives specifics. Talks about the name of the lobbying firms that are involved in this, just how much money they gave to the various politicians. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars at play here. That it's the only explanation for it. Because obviously there's no ideological potential disagreement here. I mean, maybe if you're talking about, like, you know, Rand Paul or Ron Paul, if he was still in there, they would say, look, I have a principled disagreement to Buy American, Hire American, because I think we should basically pretend borders don't exist when it comes to the economy and trade. So it should always be the best deal for the corporations. They should always try to pay the least to the labor and pay the bottom line the most. So maybe there are like a few libertarians, just a handful, who would have an ideological disagreement with this. But the reality is, even the Republican, the people in the Republican Party who are not the libertarian wing, they would all say in speeches, of course I'd rather, you know, buy American, hire American. Duh, these are my constituents we're talking about. But that's just their rhetoric. So there's no ideological disagreement. Ideologically, the overwhelming majority of people in Washington go, yeah, I'd want to buy American and hire American over what? Buy Mexican, hire Mexican, buy Swedish, hire Swedish, buy fucking, I don't know, Indian. So there's no ideological disagreement. It all comes down to the money. They were paid to disagree with something, which is an obvious, which is a layup in the political world. Hey, should we buy American, hire American? So this is the way the sausage is really made, and it's disgusting, and now you know. Okay. Next. Okay, we go on to... President Trump getting his ass handed to him, and so what they plan on doing now. So now that President Trump got his ass handed to him on the Muslim ban and on Obamacare, he's going to go for a layup here and try to do something which should be easy. So Vice President Mike Pence said this weekend that the next priority is tax reform. Pence gave some specifics. He said that Trump wants to cut the corporate tax to 15% from what it is right now, 35%. And his reasoning was he wants to spur investment. So the House Republicans are actually working on legislation at the moment to cut it to 20%. So there's a little, I guess there's a little bit of disagreement in terms of what's possible and what the right rate is, but they're looking at going from 35% nominal rate to 20% or 15% nominal rate. Now, let me go ahead and give you some facts on this so that you understand just how misleading this entire debate is. When you mention a 35% corporate tax rate, oftentimes you'll hear common talking point on the right, whether it's like on CNBC in the business community or whether it's on Fox News or just standard Republican circles, they'll say, man, 35% so damn high, it's one of the highest rates in the world, one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world. Now, that actually is true. The 35% rate is one of the highest rates in the world. But again, massively misleading. Why? Because that's what's called the nominal rate. The nominal rate is just what the rate is on paper. That's not what these corporations are actually paying. So the rate that matters is what's called the effective tax rate. That's the rate that you actually end up paying. And when you look at the effective corporate tax rate in the U.S., it's about 12%. So 35% on paper, about 12% in real life. But because it's a higher nominal rate, there's all these garbage talking points out there filling the airwaves about how, oh my God, our poor multinational corporations that make billions and billions of dollars in profit. When will they get a break? They're such victims. They face such severe discrimination. Leave the multinational corporations alone. So that's disgusting. And again, that's basically so misleading as to be a lie. I mean, I guess some of the people talking about this stuff are just super duper ignorant and they don't know that and they're like corporate puppets and tools and they've been misled. But they're either ignorant or stupid, the people who bring up that talk point. There's no other option. You're either ignorant because you don't know all the actual facts, but you're talking about this, or you're stupid. And you think, you know, well, ignorant, stupid, or excuse me, lying too. There's another option. Ignorant, stupid, lying. if you push this propaganda on the corporate tax rate. So... but it's even worse than that, because they're trying to cut it from the 35% rate that it isn't to 15% or to 20%. Now, you say, well, Kyle, hold on. If they're paying about 12% now, which is the effective rate, well, then wouldn't that be better for them to change the rate to 15% or 20%? Because then you're actually increasing taxes on the corporations. Well, the answer to that is also no, because what they'll do is leave the fucking loopholes that they still have right now, which makes it so that it was 35%, the nominal rate, but they paid 12%. So it might be, for example, they cut it to 20%, but with all the fucking loopholes and deductions, they pay 8%. Or it could be they cut it to 15%, the nominal rate to 15%, but with all the loopholes and deductions, they end up paying 5% on average. So, and even if, here's the other thing. So even if they try to do the reform and also say, pay lip service to, we're going to get rid of all the loopholes and deductions too. Usually, number one, they don't do that. They'll just pay lip service to it, but not actually do it in the final bill. Or they'll get rid of some loopholes and deductions, but not nearly enough. And then later on, they just sneak them back in there. Because all you have to do is add that as a, you know, as an amendment to a bill that's obscure on some other issue, and nobody bats an eyelash because they're all serving their corporate donors anyway, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans. So, again, massively misleading. The rate's not 35%. It's basically the effective rate is 12%. They want to cut it to 20% or 15%, but they want to leave in the loopholes and make and just slash that rate down to basically even lower, 5%, 8%, whatever it may be. Now, furthermore, many of the biggest corporations already pay an effective tax rate of 0%. The 12% effective rate is just the average. But there, when you have a fucking team of lobbyists and attorneys, you can find ways to chisel away at that, chip away at that, and, you know, next thing you know, you're paying a 0% effective tax rate. In fact, some of them, I'm not kidding about this, I know this sounds crazy, some of them have a negative tax rate. So in other words, they get a corporate welfare check every year. So for example, DuPont, the giant company DuPont, they have a negative 11.5% tax rate. Honeywell, and I think this is for the year 2010 or 2011, they have a negative 38.7% tax rate. And my favorite, GE, has a negative 64% tax rate. Oh, good googly moogly. So these multinational corporations get away with anything. You know, when you have the attorneys, when you have the lobbyists, when you've bought the government, when you do your campaign contributions, which are just legal bribes, turns out that's why some of the top corporations have a 0% effective tax rate, or even better than that, they just get a giant welfare check, a negative tax rate. Now, the most important fact of all here I save for last. In 1952, the corporate tax accounted for 33% of all federal tax revenue. Today, corporate taxes bring in less than 9%, despite record-breaking profits. So think about that. They've shifted the tax burden from the corporations to the middle class, to you, to regular people, regular taxpayers. That's the sick trick that's been played. And again, people will try to obfuscate this or hide this, but those are the facts. When you go back to 1952, corporations paid 33% of all federal taxes. Now they pay less than 9%. So somebody had to make up that difference. You made up that difference. So anytime these Republicans talk about, oh, we're going to cut taxes for middle-class families and cut across the board, that's what they say. But when you look at their actual proposals, when you get into the details of it, they end up cutting taxes for corporations, and they end up cutting taxes for the top 1%. For you, for regular people, you get your taxes raised. And by the way, further evidence of this, what did Trump do on day one in office? On day one in office, his first move as president was to sign an executive order that gets rid of a tax break for first-time homebuyers. So he effectively raised taxes on the middle class as his first act as president. So he's not talking about you. They are not talking about you when they talk about cutting taxes. Understand that fully because it's very, very important. I think that happens to be one of the main arguments that the Republicans push that gets them some middle-class votes when they say, I just want to cut your taxes. That's all I care about. I just want to cut your taxes and give you more of your own money. Well, who's going to say no to that? What middle-class person is going to say, no, here, I want the government to have more of my money? So that's an argument that resonates. But they're lying to you. Because they talk about, even in this article, oh, the Republican priority now is cutting taxes. But then you go on and read the details and you find out, oh, they're actually just talking about corporate taxes in this case. So they're talking about cutting taxes for the rich and corporations. They're not talking about it for the middle class. They're going to raise taxes on the middle class. And here you have all the information in front of you. You already know that corporations are paying less than they were in the past. They've shifted the burden onto you. And now they want to shift even more of it onto you, and the Republicans are like, yes, I can't wait, because the Republicans are taking campaign contributions from those corporations, so they do their bidding, and they stab their constituents in the back. That's exactly what's happening here. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, The Hill has an article about the strategy that the corporate Democrats are continuing to use against Trump. Sad.
Sad.
And the Democrats who aren't sellouts, wait until you hear what they're up to. It's some good stuff. I can't wait to talk about that. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. One is a doozy. The Hill has an article about the strategy that the corporate Democrats are continuing to use against Trump. And I got to be honest with you, man, it's past the point of me just being angry and annoyed by it. I'm now actually scared by it. So you'll see what I mean here. It says, Democrats step up calls that Russian hack was an act of war. Quote, Democratic lawmakers are publicly calling out Russia for engaging in war by meddling in the U.S. presidential election. Let's pause. That framing is so misleading because they're calling it, the thing that they're calling an act of war, war is Russia allegedly, I stress that because that's just the facts of what we know right now, it's not proven, allegedly giving the DNC email leaks to WikiLeaks and then WikiLeaks releasing it. Now remember, what did we learn in those leaks? We learned a lot of things that we should have fucking known. We learned, for example, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was pressuring the media to give better coverage about Hillary Clinton and herself. She said, hey, how about I talk to your boss? She was talking to people on Morning Joe. How about I talk to your boss because I don't like the way that you're covering us? We learned that they tried to atheist shame Bernie Sanders in the Midwest as part of a strategy because Hillary was polling poorly in the Midwest. So they said, I don't know, these people are really religious. How about we just atheist shame Bernie Sanders and raise questions about his faith? We learned that they celebrated closed primaries. I mean, think about that, man. They celebrated closed primaries. So they were happy that fewer people voted because they knew, hey, that means that Hillary's more likely to win. When you allow in independents, when you allow in more millennials, when you have more people in an open process, in a democratic process, well, then she's more likely to lose. So the list goes on and on. I mean, later on, Donna Brazile leaking the questions to Hillary Clinton before the debates. I mean, what a gigantic fucking scandal that is. So we learned that they tried to hide the debates. They biased the process, tipped the scales against Bernie Sanders from the very beginning. So the establishment had their anointed one, Hillary Clinton. And this is what we learned in those email leaks. Now, we should know that. The American people, we're talking about what's supposed to be a democracy, what's supposed to be a free and open process. But no, we have rigging and tipping the scales and fuckery going on behind the scenes. And Russia allegedly are the ones that get that information to WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks releases it. And everybody goes, oh, Russia, this is an act of war by Russia. That's unbelievable. So you want to fight a war over allegedly an act that made the system and the process more open and more transparent and more what it's supposed to be like in a democratic system. And by the way, I keep saying allegedly because it is allegedly. You talk to WikiLeaks and they say, they swear up and down, we did not get these leaks from Russia. Now, our intelligence agencies say, Yeah, you did. But I don't fucking trust our intelligence agencies at all. I trust WikiLeaks way more. Why? Because WikiLeaks has been proven to be right about everything else they fucking talk about. You know, the intelligence agencies, on the other hand, what's the CIA most recently in the fucking news for? Oh, I don't know, engaging in systemic torture? And obviously, back in the day, they would overthrow foreign governments and put in corporate fascist puppets to do the bidding of our multinational corporations. So I don't trust they were just recently in the news because we got it from WikiLeaks that they're now, it's not just the NSA that can spy on everything you do. It's the CIA too, and they're spying through smart TVs. So no, I don't fucking trust the intelligence. How do I trust the intelligence agencies? And WikiLeaks, again, what did we learn from them? Well, we learned the Chelsea Manning leaks that you had the U.S. military droning civilians, doing a double tap on them, so killing the civilians, circling around, hitting the first responders who were just the people trying to, the ambulance trying to help them out, and then they're laughing about it and joking about it and stuff. So we learned about war crimes we committed. So WikiLeaks has gained my trust. They're super nonpartisan. They were trying to get their hands on Trump's tax returns right now to release them. So you can't say, oh, they're so biased in favor of Republicans. Well, under Bush, they went after Bush. So they're for transparency in government. It's not a partisan thing on their behalf. So just they've established a trust. They swear up and down it's not from Russia. Partisan Democrats, establishment Democrats say, no, that is the case. The intelligence agencies say, no, that is the case. But now we're talking about war over that. War over, leaks that we should have seen either way. We need to know how the sausage is made in a democracy. It's a fucking democracy. We're supposed to have free flow of information. So, and for everybody who says, well, that's not fair because what about the Republicans? Allow me to say on the record right now, I'm in favor of getting RNC emails too. It's not like all of a sudden if you release the RNC emails, I'm going to be like, oh, what about their privacy? No, it's different. It's like when the president fucking does these wantonly illegal things. Do they get to say, I have privacy rights? No, we're your fucking boss, bitch. We put you in there. So if you're in the government, transparency is the way it's supposed to go. It's not, you're not a private citizen. The DNC and the RNC, these are giant arms representatives of the two political parties that run the fucking country. They need transparency. They don't get the same Fourth Amendment rights. Because it's an organization and it is a political and public organization, they don't get the same kind of rights as, a grandma in Wyoming. So understand, that's the way I measure it. If you're in government, transparency. I need full transparency. Now, I get it. The DNC and the RNC are technically private organizations. But the way they act, what they are, is not really private. Because, again, they're representatives of the two major political parties in the U.S., which are public, which are very important and have a lot of power. So if you leak stuff on them, that's totally fair game to me. It's not the same as leaking, information on a private citizen who might be a celebrity or something, for example. So yes, leak the RNC stuff, leak the DNC stuff. But now all of a sudden people flip-flop for partisan reasons on leaks, and it drives me fucking crazy. Okay, so they're saying there's active war. Oh boy, let's continue. They say the Democrats have been particularly bullish in the wake of FBI Director James Comey's disclosure that the Bureau is investigating whether there was coordination between President Trump's associates and Russia in the influence campaign, which involved leaking hacked personal emails, they say, from Democratic operatives to damage candidate Hillary Clinton. All right, pause again. Damage her? These are facts. So they frame it like, unbelievable. They're damaging her. As if it's like all made up. No, they are damaging her by giving information and data and quotes. I mean, guys, this is an old Republican trick. The old Republican trick is you quote what they say to them, and then they go, oh, I can't believe you're smearing me and doing a personal attack. No, bitch, you said it. I'm just quoting back what you fucking said. Same thing here with the DNC emails. She says all these things. By the way, we learned she said, we want totally open trade borders. That's what we want. The TPP is the gold standard. She has said that publicly. But we learned in the internal emails, we want open borders. Now, people on the right misinterpreted that as open borders like people, open borders. No, no, no. She, in context, she was 100% talking about trade, open trade borders. So no tariffs, no protectionism at all. Just let the corporations run wild and outsource all the fucking jobs and pad the bottom line and pay for slave labor in Bangladesh and elsewhere. That's what it really was. And that's worse. So, in other words, you quote her, what she says, what she believes, what they're doing behind the scenes, and then they go, oh, I can't believe you quoted me. This makes me look really bad. Yeah, no shit, because you fucking said it and you're wrong to say it. So, again, this is the old Republican trick. Focus on the fact that there were leaks as opposed to what is in the leaks. That's so fucking gross, man. It's so gross. And you know damn well that if the shoe was on the other foot and the scenario was flipped, then the parties would flip. In fact, Trump already did that. With leaks coming out of Trump's administration, all of a sudden now he's the most anti-leak person in the world. He's like, these are criminal leaks. Criminal leaks. And the Republicans go as far as to say the journalist should be, brought up on trial, brought up on charges. What? So in other words, leaks when they affect Trump, oh my God, this is illegal. Leaks when they affect Hillary, oh, that's great and totally what should happen in a free and open democracy where we have information. So no, you have to be consistent. I'm in favor of the leaks from the Trump administration. I'm in favor of the leaks on Hillary. Because again, these are people in positions of power and the government should be transparent. Now I'm not talking, there's obviously things where you draw the line, like don't fucking leak the nuclear launch codes, duh. You know, don't leak information about where our troops are on the battlefield right now in the midst of a fight or something, duh, got it. But outside of that, if we're learning shit that we should know anyway, I mean, the old trick that the government has been using for decades now is anything that's slightly embarrassing to us, the people in power, we're just going to say it's classified, top secret, you can't look at it, can't fucking talk about it. So it's no longer, hey, we're classifying this because it should be and because it's a legitimate state secret. It's classifying it because, man, this is embarrassing if it gets out. That's not grounds to fucking classify it. But here we go again, man. Unbelievable. That damages Hillary Clinton because she fucking said things that should damage her and we should know about it more. The warfare accusations fit into a larger narrative pushed by Democrats that casts President Trump as weak on Russia and plays up the damage done by Moscow through the electoral interference. The rhetoric also puts Republicans, who often characterize themselves as more hawkish on Russia and defense, in a bind as they try to defend the new administration's strategy on Russia. Representative Bonnie Watson Coleman, a Democrat from New Jersey, most recently accused Russia of engaging in warfare. Quote, I think this attack that we've experienced is a form of war on our fundamental democratic principles, Coleman said during a hearing this week at the House Homeland Security Committee. Two other Democrats made similar charges at the House Intelligence Committee hearing where Comey testified. Quote, I actually think that their engagement was an act of war, an act of hybrid warfare. And I think that's why the American people should be concerned about it, said Representative Jackie Speier, however you pronounce that, Democrat of California. Quote, this past election, our country was attacked. They were attacked by Russia, said Representative Eric Swalwell, Democrat of California. I see this as an opportunity for everyone on this committee, Republicans and Democrats, to not look in the rearview window, but to look forward and do everything we can to make sure that our country never again allows a foreign adversary to attack us. Senator Ben Cardin, Democrat of Maryland, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee ranking member, has similarly described the election meddling as an attack and likened it to the United States, and I quote, political Pearl Harbor. So remember at the beginning of this, I said, look, it's at the point now where this is, like, scary. Like, I'm scared by the route the Democrats are taking. This is why. Because let me ask you a question. What's the response supposed to be when we are attacked? When there is an act of war committed against us? When it's a political Pearl Harbor committed against us? What is the response that everybody across the board agrees to when that really happens? When we are really attacked? When it really is a Pearl Harbor event? When it really is an act of war, a declaration of war against the United States of America. What's the logical response? We fight back. We go to war. We actually break out the guns, get the military ready, do an invasion, get hawkish, intervene. And look, I'm speaking as a committed non-interventionist, as everybody knows. I'm against wars of aggression. I'm against offensive wars 100%. But if it were true that there was an act of war committed against us and we were attacked first and there was a political Pearl Harbor against us, well, then it's just a matter of self-defense. Get the military ready. Get the military fight. Go, 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 go. So the way they're framing it, the logical response is war. Let's go to war with Russia. This is why the hysteria and the new McCarthyism that the establishment corporate Democrats are doing is incredibly dangerous, because they're escalating to World War III. Now, understand something, guys. Let me be crystal clear. If you want to talk about financial corruption between the Trump administration and Russia, well, not only am I with you, I will lead the charge in talking about that. So if President Trump rolls back the Crimea sanctions, that's a story. That's a story. If President Trump and his now Secretary of State, the former CEO of ExxonMobil, Rex Tillerson, if they revive the Russia oil deal that they had with ExxonMobil, a multi-billion dollar deal, well, then you have a real conversation about financial corruption, that they probably worked behind the scenes and said, look, we don't really give a fuck that you jacked Crimea. The reality is we care more about money. We care more about our own personal well-being and financial gain. And we've made some deals behind the scenes. So guess what? We're going to resurrect this multi-billion dollar oil deal, which, by the way, says, again, sends the message, not only are we going to be neutral on the Crimea situation, we're going to incentivize you to maybe do it again in Estonia or elsewhere. Because then you have a real story. You have a real story of some sort of corrupt deal behind the scenes that involved money, and you know, you have the president making policy not based on what's best for the country, but the president making policy based on financial reasons. So if you want to go after the Russia angle over that, I'm with you. I'll lead the fucking charge. But they don't do that. The Democrats are now explicitly taking a hawkish line, and they're now saying President Trump is Vladimir Putin's puppet. He's a weak bitch, and Putin controls him. And now the only way that Trump can prove these establishment Democrats wrong is what? To go to war. To escalate in a military sense. And if you think I'm kidding, we covered the story a while ago. You go back and watch it. Rachel Maddow going after Trump on Russia, and she clearly argued, hey, if President Trump decides to take the NATO troops that are on Russia's border, by the way, an insane provocation. Imagine Russia put troops on Mexico's border. We would all be, oh my God, we're going to war. But we put NATO troops on Russia's border. What? We didn't do anything wrong. Rachel Maddow argued, if Trump removes those troops from NATO's border, well, then, Putin has dirt on him. And maybe the pee-pee tape is real. Remember that? The unproven, unverified, oh, there's a Russian government has a tape of hookers peeing on Donald Trump or peeing on his bed while he watches. I don't fucking know. But Rachel Maddow argued, if Trump de-escalates from the brink of war with Russia and removes the NATO troops from the border, well, then he's Putin's bitch. So now there is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The Democrats are flat-out hawks on Russia. The establishment Democrats have become neocons on Russia. This is why I get so angry about the Russia hysteria. This is why Jordan Chariton and Jimmy Dore and Michael Tracy get so angry about the Russia hysteria, because it has real-world consequences. And again, you don't find it interesting that why is the Democrats only focusing on the place where allegedly they were involved in getting the DNC leaks, again, which are factual and things they really said, why are they only focusing on the people who leaked that to WikiLeaks and then WikiLeaks ran with it? The answer is obvious. Yes, it has to do with the fact that they feel like if they could have kept all their lies and their corruption and their cheating under wraps, then they could have won. So it does have something to do with that. It absolutely does. And furthermore, if you really were concerned about the financial corruption angle and you weren't now all of a sudden hawkish on Russia, you wouldn't just talk about the Russia financial connection angle. Guys, Donald Trump has business in over a dozen other countries. We covered him the other day. I gave you the exact list of the countries he's in. He's in South Korea. He's in Mexico. He's in Turkey. And he's in China. And what he does is he has, you know, furniture made in these places, ties and clothing made in these places. And he outsources his own jobs, as he says, no, I'm against outsourcing and I'm going to protect American jobs. And there's even been, like, for example, Taiwan. Remember the phone call between Taiwan and Trump that was a big story because the Taiwanese president called Trump and said, hey, I want to congratulate you on winning. And that was this huge story. Well, that actually should have been a story, not because of the phone call. Who cares about that angle? I know China was mad or whatever, but the reason they did it is interesting because allegedly somebody from Trump's business contacted them weeks before Trump won the election and said, how about we do a hotel in Taiwan? So in other words, again, putting personal business above the policy that's correct for the country and sparking an international incident based on you wanted to make more money and build another hotel. See, that's the real angle of corruption with the Trump administration. He's already violated the emoluments clause of the Constitution because he is doing personal business dealings all over the place. He's doing it with foreign governments, like I just said, over a dozen of them he has personal business in. Furthermore, he registered 8 new businesses in Saudi Arabia during the campaign. So think about that. He registers 8 new businesses in a fucking terror state that beheads people in the public square for sorcery and witchcraft and apostasy. They say all atheists are terrorists. They cover women up from head to toe. They say you can't drive, you need guardians, you don't have the same rights. So we have a country with the same ideology as ISIS. They're ISIS that made it. He registered 8 new businesses in a terror state. Nobody fucking talks about that. They don't think that's a scandal. That's a real scandal, and there's a personal financial corruption angle where he's putting his own money, his own personal interest above the policy that's right for the United States and the world. There's your story, but no, all you want to do is scream about Russia, and you want to ignore all the other countries where he has personal financial ties and there's corruption going on, because again, it's not really, they're not really concerned, the establishment Democrats aren't really concerned about the corruption, they're corrupt too, they want a fucking Hillary Clinton to win. They're really mad about that, that's what it boils down to. They're really mad about, oh, Russia maybe was involved in getting the DNC leaks, which were real, to WikiLeaks, and then WikiLeaks ran them. So, and now they're willing to literally do escalate to war over that. And again, it's not me saying it. They keep saying it. I read you the fucking quotes. It's an act of war, act of war, act of war, act of war, act of war. Stop saying that, because then the logical response is we got to go to fucking war over emails that we should have seen anyway. So this is gone way too far. The hysteria may have even eclipsed McCarthyism. The new McCarthyism may have even eclipsed old school McCarthyism. And it's all the establishment Democrats screaming, Russia, 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 Russia. No, no, no. If you want to talk about the financial corruption, agreed. But every time you make one of these arguments where you are hawkish on Russia like all of these guys are now, like Rachel Maddow says, now Rachel Maddow, the duh position for her is just keep the troops on the Russian border. Well, then you're abandoning liberal values, you're abandoning progressive values, and you're going to lose upcoming elections. Because now you're not talking about single-payer health care, you're not talking about raising the minimum wage, you're not talking about free college, you're not talking about ending the wars. Your main argument against them is, oh my God, he's Vladimir Putin's puppet, and now we got to be hawkish on Russia. And think about it. The Democrats make 2 claims at the same time that are contradictory. The first one is, Trump is an unhinged, thin-skinned, narcissist buffoon who's trigger-happy, and look out because he's crazy. They say that while at the same time saying, oh my God, he's Vladimir Putin's puppet. When is he going to prove us wrong about that? And, you know, he's really got to be tougher on Russia. So you want the person who is a thin-skinned, narcissist buffoon who's trigger-happy and crazy to now escalate and be tougher on Vladimir Putin. That makes no sense. You pick one or the other. Either you say, yeah, go to war and be hawkish and be tougher on Vladimir Putin. Prove you're not his bitch. Either you say that or you say, whoa, 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 he's a thin-skinned narcissist buffoon and you want to make sure you stay as far away from any kind of conflict when it's that guy. Because there's no telling what a guy like that will do. So this is why, you know, it drives me crazy, man, because if you keep screaming over and over, and you've been all along, Trump is weak, Trump is weak, Trump is weak, Trump is Vladimir Putin's bitch, he's Vladimir Putin's bitch, how long until that thin-skinned narcissist decides to prove you wrong? And how long until, that's what I'm afraid of. The real Russia scandal is not just the financial corruption, which is real. The real Russia scandal is the Democrats now being more hawkish on Russia and prodding Trump so much that it might end up blowing up into a very, very serious international crisis. The real Russia scandal is the opposite of what all the establishment Democrats think it is. They think it's, he's his bitch. He's Putin's bitch. No, the real scandal is going to be when he decides to prove that he's not his bitch. And then we're all up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. So maybe pipe down with the insane, deranged rhetoric about war, act of war, act of war, act of war. Because this is getting very, very destabilizing, and it's putting us in a very, very terrible situation. All right, next. Now I'll talk about the good stuff. So guess what? Some of the Democrats in the House who aren't total sellouts have been emboldened by the Republicans losing on Trump care, and they're fighting back the proper way. So Representative John Conyers proposed a Medicare for All bill, which is awesome. It's H.R. 676. Now, at the same time, Bernie Sanders is introducing Medicare for All in the Senate. So now we have a big announcement for you. National Nurses United, brand new Congress, and Justice Democrats are calling on all congressional Democrats to support these bills. Now, as of right now, Conyers' bill has support from just 72 of 193 House Democrats. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make them all sign on to this. So I need you to take action because you're this movement. You got to go to justicedemocrats.com/single payer. Justicedemocrats.com/single payer and sign your name in support of this. And this is a petition to make 193 of 193 House Democrats get on board for this. By the way, here's a prominent name that's not on board for this. Nancy Pelosi. Oh, you think you're going to – I'm going to lead the Democrats. But a key liberal progressive position that they should stand for, she's like, yeah, no, I don't stand. It's amazing because you hear these guys – you know how you know an establishment corporatist Democrat? You know how you know them? When all they want to talk about when it comes to health care is protect Obamacare. We got to protect Obamacare. Protect it, protect it, protect it, protect it, protect it, protect it, protect it. Because guess what? Obamacare, though it was a giant step in the right direction over what we had before, it's ultimately and originally a right-wing bill. The Heritage Foundation wrote policy papers on it. Newt Gingrich and Chuck Grassley supported a version of it in the 90s. It's the individual mandate. That's what it is. That's the kind of system that Obamacare is. Nixon supported a version of it. Bob Dole supported a version of it. Mitt Romney did it in Massachusetts. So, yeah, that was the old right-wing proposal. So if you have a Democrat who only talks about protecting Obamacare, only, well, then that's a key sign that that's a corporate Democrat through and through. Because the real justice Democrats, liberals and progressives, actually principled liberals and progressives, they say, single payer, Medicare for All, not even close. That's obviously what the end goal should be because it's the only one that makes sense. All the evidence in the world points in that direction. Every other modern nation has one form or another of a single payer system, and they cover more people, they pay less, they get better quality care. It just wins across the board. So now we're going to make them do it. Now, furthermore, I'm going to ask you to do one more thing for me. I read an article a while ago that spoke about how it was somebody who worked in a congressman's office. And they said, look, of everything I saw, the one thing that really got their rear in gear, the congressman, was when phone calls flooded the office over a certain issue. And the person gives the example of a talk show host had apparently went on air and said, look, I need you to call this the congressman and say, you got to vote this way on this bill. And all it took was that one talk show host doing that. And then you had thousands of calls pour in. Everybody, they called their congressman, and they said, hey, here's what you're going to do. And they told them. They were respectful, but they said, this is what's going to happen. And if you don't do that, I'm going to vote against you in the next election, and everybody I know is going to vote against you in the next election, so try me. That's what they did. And apparently congressmen, even with all the corruption and all the money in politics, they start to feel it when they when all those phone calls start rolling in because they go, whoa, this hit a nerve. So it makes them think twice if they're going to vote the wrong way. So here's what I need you to do. I need you to call your congressman. I need you to call your congressman, and I need you to say, support H.R. 676, Medicare for All, and do it now. If you don't, I will vote against you in the next election, and I will get everybody I know to vote against you in the next election. So try me if you want to try me. Support it. That's what you say. And look, I have a quote here for you that you guys can use, because I think I love this strategy. Representative Ro Khanna was the first one to do this strategy in a committee hearing, and I thought it was great. Why not use Trump's own words and say, especially if you're calling a Democratic congressperson, use Trump's words against him and against the Republicans. Say, support this bill, and also, here's what Trump said about universal health care. Rub it in their face. Rub it in the Republicans' face. So Trump said, and I quote, "If you can't take care of your sick in the country, forget it. It's all over. I believe in universal health care." Trump said that. Trump said that. Quote, "If you can't take care of your sick in the country, forget it. It's all over. I believe in universal health care." Call your congressman. Say those words. Say, hey, here's what Trump said. Why don't you quote that back to the Republicans and say, hey, you're going to stay by your word or you're not going to stay by your word? Trump, you're going to stay by your word? Prod Trump to sign on to this bill. Prod Trump to say, I'm in favor of that. I'm actually with the Democrats on the Medicare for All bill. H.R. 676, Representative John Conyers' Medicare for All bill. We need 193 of 193 House Democrats on board here. So we're going to throw some weight around, and we're going to flex some muscle, and we're going to do it right now, because this is what we have to do if we really want to make an impact. And I also need you, to go to justicedemocrats.com/singlepayer, sign that petition, because we want as many signatures on that petition as possible to rub it in the corporate Democrats' face and in the Republicans' faces and say, "This is, look how many people we can mobilize for single payer, for Medicare for All." As of right now, 55% of the country is in favor of it. Like I told you already, all the modern nations in the world have one version or another of a single-payer system, and it just gets better results. You pay your health care, it's paid for out of your tax dollars. So here in the U.S., our money's going to $7 trillion for the Iraq war, a couple trillion more for Afghanistan, you know, corporate welfare out the wazoo, give money to the big banks and Wall Street. Why are we not reallocating funds into stuff that matters, like healthcare for people? 45,000 people die every year in the U.S. because they don't have access to basic healthcare. That's a Harvard study that found that. Millions of people uninsured, and they're having a debate over whether to keep milk toast, neoliberal reform, Obamacare, or drive the fucking bus off a cliff with Trump care and Ryan care and have 53 million people uninsured and cut $600 billion in taxes for the rich and gut Medicaid $880 billion. No. That whole debate is wrong and way on the far right of the spectrum. That Overton window's nuts, son. Single-payer Medicare for All and Medicare for All Now, H.R. 676. Sign the petition. Call your congressman. Let's push them. Let's get it done. We're going to show them that even though we don't have the numbers right now, the power's with the people in this country. Okay. Next. Next. All right, Lindsey Graham. Let's talk about him here. Actually, you know what? I'm going to hold off on Graham. Yeah, I'm going to hold off on Graham. I'm going to push him off. The Independent has an article here about foreign policy under our current lovely administration. They say civilian deaths from U.S.-led airstrikes hit record high under Donald Trump. Do you know how hard that is to achieve, given that 90% of the drone strikes under Obama, according to internal government memos, were hitting the wrong target, 90%. And now they're saying Trump... civilian deaths from U.S.-led airstrikes hit record high under Donald Trump. Okay. So, how did we come this far this fast? Well, almost 1,000 civilians have already been killed in Iraq and Syria in March. That is a record, 1,000 in 1 month. And at the end of last week, in Mosul, a U.S. airstrike killed up to 200 civilians. By the way, the headlines on that were hilarious. You should have seen the the mental gymnastics and the painstaking twisting that the various U.S. media companies did to try to, like, absolve, you know, the U.S. of their actions here. They phrased it as, like, U.S. admits that airstrike took out civilians, or, like, they wouldn't just say, U.S. airstrike kills 200 civilians. It had to be, like, U.S. acknowledges mistake in blah, 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 blah. So it's just, and you compare that with the headlines, for example, on, like, when Russia kills civilians in Syria, as they have, of course. It's like, genocide! Oh, my God! They don't care at all about civilian casualties! They're massacring them on purpose! Look at what they're doing, violent war crimes! War crimes! Violating international law! By the way, that's actually true. Yes, war crimes, violating international law, totally, but guess what? It's true when we do it too, bitch. 200 people in Mosul in a U.S. airstrike last week. 200 civilians. Barely a fucking peep. Barely a peep. There was way more coverage of the terror attack in London where, what is it, I think 4 people died and like 40 were injured or so. Now, I'm not saying that's not a story. Of course that's a story. That's a gigantic story. 200 civilians killed in a U.S. airstrike. 200 at once.
U.S. acknowledges mistake and 200 civilians killed, about, maybe. Let's move on.
So sick, man. By the way, under Trump, there's been a 432% increase in drone strikes. There's 1,000 new ground troops in Syria. They're about to do an increase in Afghanistan as well. So, look, half the time when he was campaigning, he made non-interventionist arguments.
We're not going to do these stupid wars. We're going to nation build here at home. We're going to do infrastructure. I don't know why we're wasting all this money overseas.
And what's he done since he got in power? Now he wants a $54 billion increase in military spending when we already have the biggest military the world has ever seen, ever. $54 billion increase, 432% increase in drone strikes. And by the way, most important angle of the story here, he appears to be delivering on the promise to, quote, bomb the shit out of them. Because remember, half the time he spoke non-interventionist, the other half the time he was the most hawkish of anybody ever.
He said, we're going to take out their families. We're going to take out their families.
That's exactly what he's doing. He's taking out their family. That's what he's doing. That's what this is. So he's actually holding true to his more hawkish promises, which he made half the time. So, and Cruz said it too. I want to carpet bomb until, what do you say, the sand glows or something like that? That's what Trump is doing. He's carpet bombing. He's carpet bombing. He also said repeatedly, we're going to loosen the rules of engagement. That's what this is. You know, the rules of engagement, hey, if you're on the ground, you got to get shot at first before you shoot at somebody else. It's a way to try to craft it so that you limit as many civilian casualties as possible and you're as moral as one can be in the context of fighting. He's like, fuck that. Let's fucking carpet bomb. Let's kill civilians and take out their families. This is taking out their families. He's doing exactly that. That's exactly what this is. Not a fucking peep. And by the way, what do you think this is? Like, what's the actual term for this? I'm going to do violence against civilians for a political purpose. Violence against civilians for a political purpose. Isn't there a term for that? It's not quite coming to my mind. Maybe you can fill in the blank for me. Again, you could disagree with that, but it's called a fucking textbook definition, bitch. So it doesn't matter much if you disagree with it. That's what it is. That's what Trump is doing. And you see this bias all the time in mainstream media. Us? Me? We could never be terrorists. We're us. Except that's not a convincing argument. This is state terrorism. That's what it is. And it's disgusting because apparently your options in the country are Democrats who are also in favor of high civilian casualty rate despite their flowery rhetoric, because Obama did have a high civilian death rate. So you have Democrats who are pro-war, but a little less gung-ho about it, and you have Republicans who are like, yes, war everywhere and take out their families. Yes, we killed 200 civilians. As this was happening, Trump was golfing. I'm not kidding. Trump was golfing as his military was massacring civilians, perhaps on purpose. So this is your government. This is my government. Yay! Next. Republican Representative Joe Barton had a very honest moment when the Obamacare replacement bill failed. Here's what he said. Reporters asked why... Oh, excuse me. That's actually... That's not the full quote. Here we go. Let me find it. Here we go. My bad. Sometimes you're playing fantasy football, and sometimes you're in the real game. We knew the president, if we could get a repeal bill to his desk, it would almost certainly be vetoed under Obama. This time, we knew if it got to the president's desk, it would be signed. Damn. Okay, that's an admission that the Republican Party is just a party of no. Like, their whole strategy, their whole philosophy, their whole mindset, everything about them is based in, and it's been like this for 8 years it was under Obama. Is it, no. Okay, well, what we want to do is maybe do the stimulus package so that we can create jobs. No. We want to maybe bail out GM because, you know, GM is kind of important, and if that crashes, we might have a depression instead of just a recession. No, we don't do that. Okay, well, how about if we do your ideas and I cut small business taxes over 12 times? No, I don't want to. How about if I do your health care plan and do an individual mandate system and it's the same as the Heritage Foundation and what they propose is very similar to what? No. How about I reduce the deficit? I propose a budget that reduces the deficit. No. So the Republican Party, zero ideas, nothing, just no. No, that's what they ran on. That's what they were. And now Joe Barton's admitting it. He's like, look, because they tried to repeal Obamacare over 60 times. But he's saying, look, on some level we knew. First of all, it's not going to get through the Senate. But if it gets through the Senate, then President Obama's going to veto it. So we can do this basically political grandstanding in this game of obstruction. And it didn't require any thinking. Now that we're in power, what are we supposed to do? I don't know. What do we do now that we're in power? Because guess what? If you were to actually go through, let's say you did what's called a clean repeal. So you get rid of Obamacare, you have nothing to replace it, you just did a clean repeal. What would happen? Okay, Medicaid would collapse, the health insurance system as we know it would collapse. You'd have a crisis throughout the country, way above and beyond even the crisis we have now in our healthcare, and our healthcare is shitty compared to the rest of the modern world. So the Republicans would be wiped out in a wave like you've never seen in the upcoming elections if that were to happen. So now that they're in power, they're like, okay, I know what we're against, but what are we for? And now, since the Republican Party has moved so far to the right, and they're so extreme, and they already said no to their own bill, which is Obamacare, because that's the individual mandate. That was their bill, their idea originally in the 90s. Well, where do you go from there if you're against your own bill now because the Democrat proposed your bill? So the Democrat moved to the right. You moved even further right off a fucking cliff. And now literally all they had was like, right-wing talk radio talking points that they scrapped together. I'm not kidding. They think,
well, get rid of the lines around the states, the insurance lines around the states, and, like, gut Medicaid and do a tax cut for the rich.
And you looked at the numbers from the CBO, and it was like, oh, my goodness. It's like they crafted a bill without even trying to make it good for the people. 53 million people uninsured, $600 billion tax cut for the top 1%. $880 billion gutted from Medicaid. All they did was took right-wing talking points and, I don't know, put them in a bill and hope it works out well. And then when you actually do the math on it, people went, oh, my God, what the fuck is this? Because they don't have any ideas. They didn't know what to do. They're like, I don't know, right-wing talking points. Go, put them together and see what happens. So they have nothing. They have nothing. They have nothing. They have nothing. They're an ideologically bankrupt party. But by the way, how sad is that the Republicans are that extreme, and the Democrats still couldn't beat them. Because what that shows you is the Democrats have moved to the right, and they've become vapid and vacuous, and they don't really stand for much. They try to appease corporations as well. But if the Democrats had a real liberal progressive message to counter the insane off-the-spectrum right-wing absurdity of the Republicans, well, then we'd win every fucking election. If you had Democrats always make an argument for single-payer Medicare for all and explain how it's better and give the numbers and give the details, we would never lose a fucking election. If you actually argued for progressive values, hey, 80% of the American people want to raise the minimum wage. We want to raise the minimum wage. But Australia's minimum wage is $18 an hour. Ours is fucking $7.25. What a joke this is. Let's raise it. We're going to fight for working people. And what the fuck do the Republicans have to say in response?
We don't even like the current minimum wage. We want to get rid of it, and then the market will fix everything because the market's like a god wizard and stuff, and it's infallible.
They got nothing. They're an idealist party.
No.
And Joe Biden's admitting it. Yeah, we don't know. We just fucking said no a lot, and it worked, and now we're in power. We don't know what the fuck to do. So even with the off-the-spectrum Republicans, the Democrats were losing. You have every opportunity in the world to win, and you can't win. You can't fucking close the deal because you're corporate Democrats. JusticeDemocrats.com, that's the fucking answer. JusticeDemocrats.com. Because we're Democrats who will fight for progressive and liberal values. We'll actually do it. We'll actually try to implement it. And that message resonates way more than anything the corporate Democrats say and anything that these crazy fuckers in Congress and in the Senate, the Republicans say, when they admit, yeah, we got nothing. Next. The DEA is basically trolling us at this point. Listen to what they just did last week. A synthetic marijuana product could be available for commercialization after the DEA gave a newly approved drug a Schedule II classification. On Thursday, Insys Therapeutics announced that the Drug Enforcement Administration issued an interim final rule that would put Syndros, their synthetic marijuana drug, on Schedule II of the Controlled Substances Act. Quote, Insys is looking forward to bringing this new drug product to the chemotherapy patients to help alleviate their nausea and vomiting and AIDS patients with anorexia-associated weight loss, respectively. Okay, so they're saying, yeah, real marijuana, nah, we're good. But let's go ahead and approve synthetic marijuana for medical use. What? If only there was, like, a real thing that was tested and hasn't led to any overdoses ever and is actually even fine for recreational reasons and definitely okay for, like, 1,000 different medical reasons. No, they're like, we don't care. We're against the real thing, and we're for the synthetic thing, which, by the way, may be actually dangerous. We don't know. Because there's synthetic marijuana that, you know, we've done stories on where it legitimately gives people, like, seizures and shit and send them to the hospital. So the synthetic is more dangerous than the real thing. Now, I don't know if this synthetic one is different, and it very well may be. But why would you not just approve the regular one? Well, we know the answer. The answer is corruption. So a lot of you guys might not know this, but the DEA and Big Pharma, they're two of the biggest players in the lobbying fight against legal recreational weed and medicinal weed because their jobs depend on that being illegal. The DEA, how many people would get fired from the DEA if tomorrow we decided weed's legal? A lot, right? How much would be cut from the profits of Big Pharma if we had legal weed tomorrow? Well, a lot, because it's easier to – there are some people out there who are on pain pills, for example, who don't want to be on pain pills, and marijuana does the trick for them. So, okay, you lose money from that. You lose money from people with various ailments who smoke marijuana, and they can take care of whatever ills they have that way. It's a decent number of people. So they view it as competition to what they're doing. And they go as far as to, like, this is nothing but a corrupt backroom deal. Marijuana, which has killed nobody, is a Schedule I drug, which means it's the worst classification, no recreational purpose, no medicinal purpose, they say, legally in the U.S. But synthetic marijuana? Oh, yeah, it's Schedule II. You can have that prescribed and stuff. By the way, Insys Therapeutics, this pharmaceutical company, they donated $500,000 to kill marijuana legalization in Arizona. By the way, anytime you see a direct ballot initiative and legalized marijuana fails, it's because Big Pharma spent money on the no campaign and misled people. That's always what happened. So it passed in a lot of places, great, but Big Pharma always just spends heavy to try to defeat it, because overall, about 60% of the American people want to legalize weed at a federal level, never mind at a state level. So it's overwhelmingly popular. But when it gets defeated, it's because of big money. And when you get deals like this cut, it's because of big money. It's not because they actually, oh, we did these objective scientific studies and we found that this synthetic marijuana is better than the other marijuana for reasons X, Y, and Z, and this is okay for medicinal purposes. This is not okay for medicinal purposes. No, it's all corrupt backroom deals. We know that recreational marijuana is safer for you, but since these guys view it as competition, not going to happen, not going to let it through. This is why you need to get money out of politics, because until you do that, you're always going to have fuckery like this behind the scenes, and it's disgusting. The Verge has a story about United Airlines that I want to share with you guys. This got under my skin. So they didn't let three girls board a flight because they were wearing leggings. Three girls were not allowed to board a flight because they were wearing leggings. Wow. So they were going to Minneapolis from Denver, and a female gate agent told them that they couldn't board. One of them ended up changing and getting on board. The others missed the flight. And United's contract states that people can be kicked off if they're, quote, barefoot or not properly clothed. And they say they leave it to the discretion of the boarding agent to determine that. And as people were pointing out on social media, well, hold the fuck on now. Barefoot or not properly clothed is as vague as possible. I mean, I guess barefoot is specific, but properly clothed? Properly clothed is in the eye of the beholder. What does that mean? What if you hire a fundamentalist Muslim and he's like, the women haven't covered their faces, they can't get on? Well, if you're leaving it to the discretion of the boarding agent and they determine that's not properly clothed, by your own standard, by your own logic, that's totally fine. You've got to get kicked off because you're a woman and you're not covering your face, you whore. Get away. Fucking in Minneapolis. Women, look at these sluts wearing leggings. That's not properly clothed. We're not going to let you on. The fuck is that shit, man? And then, okay, the part of the story that actually got me most pissed off is, so on social media blew up over this, okay? They were like, what the fuck are you doing? What is this, Saudi Arabia? That's how we act now? Oh, yeah, that's too revealing. We're not going to let you on. On Twitter, when people asked them about it, they would respond with the thing directly coming from upper management, and they defended it. They defended it. They were like, yeah, no, this is, they determined they didn't meet the dress code. What do you want me to do? And then they even, in a separate tweet, so some of them were directly responding to people who asked about it, and then in a separate tweet, they explained it for everybody to see. They're like, yeah, no, they didn't meet the proper dress code, and we leave it up to the discretion of the boarding agent, so that's what happened. So they kick off these poor girls for wearing leggings, which is, I don't know, super duper common and not at all a problem. Then they double down on it, then they triple down on it. I'm at a loss for words. Yeah, fuck you, United. You're fucked up. Change that immediately. And how stupid is everybody in your boardroom and upper management? They didn't understand immediately that this was a mistake. They circled the wagons. They doubled down on something that made absolutely no sense. Here's what you do the second you learn about this. That border agent has been suspended. You know, you don't even need to let that person lose the job. Just explain to them you can't do it again, and we're going to suspend you for a week or a month. Whatever. Suspended or fired, we're taking action, and it'll never happen again. And, of course, you're allowed to wear leggings. What were we thinking? Huh. And we're going to give them free flights for a year. That's how you handle it, but they didn't handle it. They doubled down on stupid, and now it's a national news story. Okay, next.
Pat Robertson made an awesome prediction last week that I want to share with you. Let's watch.
I have a prediction to make. You can hold me to it. If I'm wrong, you can say you missed it. The health care bill is going to pass, is getting modified. The Freedom Caucus is going to get the modifications they're asking for. We're going to talk to David Brody to see what actually is there. But my prediction is it's going to pass. They're going to give Trump a victory. It's going to go through the Senate. And we are all going to rejoice that we're paying less on health care. Now, that's my prediction. And wait till tomorrow. You can prove me wrong if I'm wrong.
You heard it here.
You heard it here. Well, I knew that the Lord was going to give Trump victory, and I was arguing. People were arguing with me. No, he can't win. Yes, he's going to be the next president. Oh, no, he's going to win.
Well, we had that fascinating guest on that talked about, Cyrus in biblically and how
I had it
God
before the fascinating
him.
Guest, but I mean, before the election, they're going to get it. I mean, they're going to give it to the president. Mark my word, it will pass. They'll get those extra votes. It'll go through and everything. You know, they're going to work together to give a tremendous health care.
Oh, that was great. He just had to bring God into it, didn't he? I wasn't going to cover it when it was just the, I have predictions. The prediction is that the health care bill's going to pass. I wasn't going to cover it just based on that, because whatever. Pat Robertson's wrong. Whoop-de-doo, that's something that happens literally every day. But when he brought God into it, I was like, you prick. Now I got to do it. Because you can't just let your own shitty prediction be. You had to say, like, and the Lord told me. The Lord told you, dick. That's what the Lord told you. He didn't tell you anything. You're not told. If you hear voices in your head, Pat, those are just voices in your head. That's not the great wizard in the sky. That's not Jigglypuff in space. I can assure you of that. But lest you think that, well, come on, man. This is just one time he's wrong. First of all, I know none of you think that. But second of all, remember that Pat Robertson predicted Mitt Romney would win in 2012? And again, he had to bring God into it. Yeah, he brought God into it. God, Lord told me, came to me in a dream, said Mitt Romney gonna win. But I love how there's, / hate, because that's what it really is, how there's zero accountability for these people. None. No accountability whatsoever. You could say anything. Say whatever you want. You can get away with it. And it wasn't just Pat Robertson, by the way. It was Glenn Beck said Mitt Romney would win in a landslide. George Will said Mitt Romney would win in a landslide. Larry Kudlow on CNBC said Mitt Romney would win in a landslide. Like, it's one thing if you just thought, well, maybe he'll win, but I don't know. But I think he'll win. And if he wins, he'll win by a little bit. That's one thing. They didn't say that. Landslide, and Pat Robertson, God says he's going to win. God, the Lord says Trump's going to win. The Lord says Freedom Caucus going to give him the health care bill. That's what's going to happen. It got massively defeated. Like, defeated bigly, let me just tell you, tremendous. So perhaps, Pat Robertson is full of shit. Just perhaps. All right, final story of the day, y'all. Reuters is reporting on a backlash against Israeli occupation. So they explain here, a law barring foreigners from entering Israel if they back boycotts against the country is causing alarm among liberal American Jews and others who perceive an attempt to suppress critical political opinion. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's right-wing government has long campaigned against the Palestinian-led Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, BDS, describing it as anti-Semitic and an attempt to erase Israel's legitimacy. The movement launched in 2005 as a nonviolent campaign to press Israel to heed international law and end its occupation of territory Palestinian seek for a state, has gathered momentum in recent years, even if its economic impact remains negligible. On March 6th, Israel's parliament passed legislation saying any individuals or representatives of groups supporting BDS-type boycotts, excluding Israeli citizens and permanent residents, would be barred from the country. So, y'all know what this means, right? Yours truly has been banned from Israel. Hashtag liberal values, right? That's what it is. So only democracy in the Middle East. Liberal, freedom, democracy. That's what it is. Oh, you disagree with us? You're banned. What happened to freedom? What happened to liberalism? What happened? It's inconvenient now, so fuck that. It's a lot like when they go on these bombing sprees in Gaza, isn't it? Liberal values, freedom, democracy, liberalism, that's what we stand for. Oh, did we just kill 80% civilians in a bomb fest, including 500 children? Oops! I guess our liberalism only goes so far. I guess our liberalism only goes so far up to the point of now we're going to illegally occupy you, steal your land, and do apartheid. Liberal to a point, liberalism to a point. So, disgusting, of course. And it's the oldest trick in the book. We've seen it. It's Saudi Arabia does it, for example. You'll have Muslim fundamentalists go, ah, you're Islamophobic for disagreeing with my interpretation of Islam. Wait, what? Your interpretation says women need to be covered up from head to toe and that atheists are infidels and should be killed and that's a crime and so on and so forth. Yeah, but Islamophobia, if you're against that. It's not Islamophobia. That's fucking, hey, that's a crazy idea and I'm against it. So in other words, to say I'm against bigotry is bigoted, according to some people. And this is the same thing that they're doing here. Hey, I'm against Israel stealing land that isn't theirs and doing occupation and apartheid. Bigot, you're so bigoted because you're not pro-illegal occupation. Bigot, you're so bigoted. It's so sick. Anybody who thinks about it for 5 seconds can see through it, man. But there's one other thing I wanted to mention here because so there is the backlash now. Liberal American Jews are like, what the fuck are you doing? Because now they're banned too, ones who support BDS. But they say, well, look, the economic impact remains negligible of BDS. That's actually not true. 20% to 30% of companies in the occupied territories have left as a result of BDS. And those are numbers from about a year ago, admittedly. It might even be higher now. 20% to 30% of companies in occupied territories that this BDS is affecting our bottom line. We can't stay here. We got to leave. And they did. So BDS is actually working. And by the way, that's why they're doing this. Would they do this if it really had a negligible impact? Would they really ban people who support it? Ban them! No, they just fucking ignore it. But now they're not ignoring it anymore. Why are they not ignoring it? Because it's working. So just keep that in mind as you see more and more of these articles. Because it's having an impact and they're starting to panic. All right, guys, out of time, baby. I'll see you tomorrow. You know the deal. Same time, same place. Mwah. Love y'all, and I'll see you there. Have a great rest of the day.